It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The morning of January 28th, the Fern Hollow Bridge in Pittsburgh collapsed, injuring several people. It came on the day President Biden was visiting Pittsburgh to talk about infrastructure. The collapse brought with it a flurry of questions about the condition of the bridge, in particular, how could this happen? Sean Hamill of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reported on the latest information discovered about the bridge's condition at the time of its final inspection before it fell into Frick Park. Sean, welcome back to the Confluence.
Thank you for having me.
So you got this information through a right-to-know request for the condition of the bridge as of the early October 2021 report. Remind us, what was known about that last inspection before you received this information from transportation officials?
Almost nothing. We had obtained a database that had some inspection notes, just three or four sentences, but it really told us very little about the bridge's condition. We did know, of course, the rating for the bridge. The feds report that publicly, so does the state, and it was rated poor, but poor is a very broad category, and you'll hear repeatedly from state officials that poor doesn't mean it's going to fall. Right? You hear that all the time, and city officials. What we probably knew best was from a picture a resident had taken about 3 years before it fell. One of the legs had a support that was detached, and he was so concerned that he took a picture of it and put it on Twitter and CC'd the city on it. And that was an alarming photo when you see it 3 years before it collapsed. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, we really didn't know much.
One of the legs, I believe it had four legs, is that correct?
It did, just four legs. To a layman like myself and this person who was walking under the bridge, if you looked at those legs, most people see them now in pictures, they look kind of skinny. And they are, as the experts say, all four of them were, quote unquote, fracture critical, which means if any one of those legs collapsed, the entire bridge would collapse.
Sean, did PennDOT fight the right to know request?
They did. They provided some initial information to us as a result of the request, but they denied our request initially for the inspection reports. But after we had some conversations with them about that, we made some arguments over the phone about the state law they were citing. They went to the Office of Open Records, a state agency, and they requested an advisory opinion. And in that opinion, they essentially the OOR essentially supported our position, which was they could release these reports. Their response was to release the report with redactions, which basically means that they blacked out parts of the reports they didn't want us to see. We're not exactly sure what's in those redactions, but it appears to be commentary and analysis, some critical parts of the report. We'd love to see that, and we're going to try to get a hold of those eventually.
All right. So the information you did get that wasn't blacked out, what were some of the main structural issues that the report noted?
Lots and lots of deterioration and what they call spalling on the concrete, rust, holes in the structural supports, the steel structural supports. All over the bridge, there were problems. The bridge fell, so we knew it was in bad condition. We knew the rating was poor. But in particular, when you see the photos that were part of this report, there were about 90 photos in this report, all color photos, close-ups of the bridge, close-ups of the deteriorating concrete, close-ups of the rusted and corroded and missing steel. I mean, there are some places on the legs, the steel support legs, where you can see through the leg because the webbing, as they call it, this kind of one-inch thick piece of steel that's between the outside of the leg, there are actually holes that you could see through. And it was, you know, we knew it was bad, but when you see these photos, it's pretty alarming.
So you did see the photos alarming. Now, any idea, though, you mentioned about this serious deterioration, any idea of what caused it? Is it aging, salt? You know what our winters are like here in Western Pennsylvania. Any idea of what caused the deterioration?
Well, all the experts that we talked to from the beginning, even before we had the inspection report, said the only way you have this kind of deterioration on structural steel support legs beneath the bridge is if there's a maintenance problem on top of the bridge, that there was water probably from winter salts leaking through, getting down onto these supports and later. And really, you know, you're going to get rain on bridge supports. But what they're pointing out is you don't want to have continual water coming down laden with salts. And there was ample evidence that that was a problem, not just in the steel supports where you can see the visible rust and deterioration, but underneath the bridge deck. So you can't see the concrete on top because it was covered by blacktop. Mm-hmm. But there are photos in the report of the underside of the concrete. And under that, you can see exposed rebar, which is the steel that's used to reinforce. And it's pretty alarming when you see that, because it also says in the report, water was leaking through the concrete deck.
Sean, the Green Tree engineering firm that did the inspection, did you get a comment from them?
Yeah, they cited the fact that the National Transportation Safety Board, which is investigating what happened that led to the collapse, because they're investigating this, they said they could not comment.
Okay. The bridge is owned by the city of Pittsburgh. Any comment from the Ganey administration, other city officials?
They have not said anything about why they think this collapsed, other than to say that they hope that this doesn't happen in the future. They've created some committees to take a look at bridges. We did talk with Corey O'Connor, the councilman who represents the district that includes Fern Hollow Bridge. He's been the councilman there for 11 years. He said he was surprised by the details in this, because he said the details in this inspection report were never something he was privy to. Mm-hmm. And he hopes that changes in the future. He hopes that there's more details about bridge conditions released, not just to him, but to the public in the future.
The Post-Gazette showed this report to engineering experts. What was their reaction?
They were really eager to see this, because they've wondered since the beginning what the condition of the deck in particular looked like, but also the structural supports. They were surprised. One of the experts we talked to said he was stunned that the city hadn't closed the bridge. Another expert we talked to said that what really surprised him, looking at the photos, reading through the entire 106-page report, was that something didn't happen after this report was filed. Both experts we talked to said this was a really well-done inspection report, but the action comes after the inspection report is filed. And that's where they say, if there was an error, somebody above the inspectors should have done something, either their bosses, engineers with the city, or engineers with PennDOT. Somebody should have taken some action.
Sean, what were the official reasons given that the bridge wasn't shut down or restrictions weren't placed on the span? Any update to the posted weight limit? Any reasons given?
Well, in the report itself, it says specifically because the conditions of the bridge basically hadn't changed since the 26-ton weight limit was set in 2014, that they didn't see any need to reevaluate that tonnage limit. But overall, since the beginning, what they basically said is, well, this is a poorly rated bridge, but nobody ever thought that it was in such bad shape it had to be closed.
Mm-hmm. Sean, we're still waiting the final report on the incident from the NTSB. What are you still hoping to learn?
I would like to know who were the people who received this inspection report. What was the conversation when they saw this inspection report and prior inspection reports? Was there a hard conversation about whether or not they should look at reducing the tonnage limit, putting restrictions on the bridge, like going to a single lane? Anything that would have shown that they were alarmed by what they were seeing. But we really don't know that. We don't have email back and forth about what happened after this report was filed.
Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter Sean Hamill, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Republican voters looking to pick a candidate for governor had a lot of choices on the ballot last Tuesday. There were 9 names, 2 of which had dropped out by Election Day. In this crowded field, State Senator Doug Mastriano clinched the GOP nomination for the general election in November. But it was no secret that rank-and-file Republicans were rallying around other candidates leading up to the primary. So how did we get here? With us is Stephen Caruso, Capitol reporter with Spotlight PA, who, with his colleague Ethan Edward Costin, covered Mastriano's rise to the GOP nomination. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks for having me.
If you could, give us a quick snapshot of Mastriano, what would you say?
He is a 58-year-old Arch-Conservative state senator. He's a retired Army colonel. He served in the Gulf War, if not mistaken. And he has basically made his entire reputation on opposing COVID lockdowns, spreading misinformation and disinformation about the 2020 election. He was at January 6th, and then he's just been riding that train since.
Is it safe to say he's an election denier?
Yeah, if you want to use that phrase. You know, he's been on that. He was supposed to lead the audit that the General Assembly started. He was even kicked off of that for wanting to go too far when other lawmakers didn't want to go that far as fast as him.
He's been a state senator for less than 2 years. So how did he rise in stature so quickly?
Honestly, like, I would say social media. So he started as a backbencher. In fact, one of the first stories that we have about him, he ran in a special election in spring of 2019. And one of my former colleagues did a story on memes he was sharing that were like Islamophobic memes that implied that like Muslims had burned down the Notre Dame Cathedral. You can remember that. That feels like forever ago. So and then after, like, he kind of was just like, he introduced the heartbeat bill, a 6-week abortion ban. He wasn't known for a lot. He voted party line. He voted, you know, for Act 77, Pennsylvania's mail-in ballot law. He's doing all the things you expect a conservative backbencher would do. And then COVID hits, and he becomes one of the leading voices against Governor Tom Wolf, becomes one of the leading voices against mask mandates. He appears at the April 20th rally in 2020 when a bunch of people showed up on the Capitol steps. It was one of the first big reopens. And his constant showing up here, combined with, he would do these almost daily Facebook Live videos where he would talk, he would give his, you speak his mind. And I met so many voters over the years. And when I asked them why they like Mastriano, they'd go back to, well, during lockdown, during those early days, he, like, I would tune in and I found his videos, and watching him just made me feel like there was hope. And I think that just built this really loyal following for him.
The social media, was he funny, satirical, harshly critical? What in his tweets?
All of the above. I mean, like, I've watched them. Like, the dude has charisma. You have to give him that. And he often will sprinkle in these references to the Bible. He's a deeply Christian man. He loves using certain quotes from founding fathers. One of his favorite seems to be, facts are stubborn things. John Adams said that. And he'll go into a talk about, like, you know, some statistic he's found that supports why there's voter fraud or issues like that. So, yeah, like, watching it, I get why he's deeply appealing to people.
Mm-hmm. What was the hesitancy at best and maybe antagonism at worst toward Mastriano for some Republican Party leaders?
So the best way to put it is that, like, they thought he was unelectable. And they thought that because of, like, because of those videos, because he took stances that were kind of common in the GOP field. Pretty much every governor candidate on the GOP side said they wanted to ban abortion. They wanted to, you know, get it down to 6 weeks, maybe even 0 weeks. But, like, Mascherano was also, like, there are these three exceptions that you'd often hear people say, well, like, I support abortion bans, but also, unless it's rape, incest, or the life of a parent. Mascherano was being like, those should go away. There should be no abortion. In a debate, he even compared the fight against abortion to the fight to end slavery, bringing up a British abolitionist. So, like, you know, he takes the issue seriously, like, on the election fraud, like, you know, claims of that. Other Republicans were just signing letters that said, oh, there were irregularities, wouldn't get to specifics, and then asked Congress to do the dirty work. Mastriano straight up claimed by using bad data that there were more mail-in ballot cast in the general election in 2020 than were requested, which is false. It's just false. Mm-hmm. And he also signed on to legislation to try and have the General Assembly straight up appoint new electors in the election. Mm-hmm. So, like, every sort of step that most Republicans are taking now, he has been like, I'm going to take it to the nth degree. Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't a strong fundraiser, you point out, raised only like $1.5 million, sort of middle of the road among the 9 candidates who wound up on the ballot. Only 7 remained. So did he use sort of social media to overcome that lack of money to pump into TV ads?
Well, it's almost like he didn't need the TV ads. Because the thing with his fundraising is that, like, he was middle of the pack, yes, but I actually had one person say, as soon as I saw his report, I knew he was going to win because so many of them were such small numbers. Like, he has a campaign finance report that's hundreds of pages of long because most of it's coming from small donors, like people who probably just saw him, saw him at an event, saw one of his videos, and like, I'll throw $20 in, like, pass the hat, I'm willing to contribute to him. So it isn't a lot of money, but you know, he got 44% of the vote without, I think I saw that maybe he spent a little bit of money on some ads, but really most of his money was just spent on him barnstorming the state, showing up in every corner, every county to try and show up at these small events and put himself in front of voters and convince them why he's the right candidate.
Sounds like a grassroots campaign, social media style.
Exactly. Yeah, that's how he won.
Mm-hmm. Now, he has been subpoenaed by the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th Capitol riot. He used campaign funds to send charter buses to the Capitol. Any idea if his presence at the Capitol that day actually appealed to voters?
That, you know, is hard to say. I think that there probably were some people who did like that. I think that there are probably some people who are maybe put off by that. And I think there's going to be some people in between. You know, like I talked to a voter for this story who told me that like his involvement in January 6th, and this voter voted for Lou Barletta, but because they were worried that Mastriano couldn't win a general election. They saw all the rhetoric at the end from Republicans, but he voted for Barletta, and then he was looking at Mastriano like, look, I don't like the result January 6th. I don't like that he spent a lot of time talking about the 2020 election. We have to move on. That's bad for democracy. But his biggest issue was abortion, and he was just like, look, I don't like it. I don't dislike it. Like, it's just not, it's not the main thing I'm going to decide on. So, you know, I think that's a to be seen point.
Very briefly, now, former President Trump endorsed him the weekend before the primary election. Do we have a sense of how big of a boost that gave him?
You know, it's hard to say. I think that it probably helped, but I think there's also some reporting that Trump likes jumping out in front of a parade and saying he led it. So I think it might help them get up there. But as we look at his background, it makes a lot of sense that a lot of people were flocking towards him at the end.
So, Stephen, as this election campaign moves forward, do you think the GOP party officials who said or indicated he might not be electable are going to get behind him and get behind him strongly?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, last night he had dinner with Senate Majority Leader Kim Ward, who kicked him out of the caucus with some other top leadership in last year in light of all that issues with the audits I mentioned. So, Ward endorsed Dave White, one of his opponents, at the last minute, I think, making the same sort of claim. He's more electable. Dave White, he's a union guy. He's from outside of Philly. He'll win. And then last night they had dinner together. So, you know, I think everyone's going to try to come to peace because Republicans might not like Mastriano, but they definitely don't like Josh Shapiro.
So we come behind, get together behind our person, even if we didn't necessarily like him originally.
That's politics. That's what seems to be what happens these days.
Stephen Caruso is the Capitol reporter with Spotlight PA. Stephen, thanks as always for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Next time, we examine the first ever joint audit of the Pittsburgh Police Bureau by the City Controller and the Citizens Police Review Board. Plus, the 2030 district switches its primary focus to carbon reduction. Thanks to our team, Nick Konopka, Laura Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.